Leah Flyder with the Kansas Association of School Boards. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning, Nick.
All right. Wanted to talk to you because this is the real last busy week before what the legislature calls first adjournments. And what I texted you about on Friday was the progress on special education funding specifically. So what do we know about that?
Well, Nick, there's a bill that will be voted on tomorrow on the House floor. It's called House Up for Senate Bill 387, and it's a bill that combines K-12 funding for the general classroom as well as $77 million in special ed funding as well. Unfortunately, it also contains some negative elements that KASB is opposing.
Okay, what are those?
Well, the bill, unfortunately, it counts local property tax dollars as state special education funding. So it's basically the legislature attempting to say, you know, we know there is a $400 million statewide shortfall for special education funding, but we're just going to count some of your local tax dollars and pretend that state aid, and we're just going to call problem fixed. And that is not the case.
Okay. This seems similar, and I don't know because I know Mark was doing the day-to-day at the State House. I don't remember how long you've been with KASB, Leah, but I know you've been following this even longer than that. That in the, 14 or 15 legislative session, in order to make school funding work out, the legislature counted some funding toward the CAPERS that teachers get as part of the school funding to try to make numbers work. This seems like a similar move.
It is. Unfortunately, it is a similar kind of shell game, saying that, you know, you're going to have to, that the local taxpayers are going to have to foot the bill for the state's refusal to fund special education. And, you know, I don't know if your listeners are fully aware, but if the state doesn't fund special education, that hurts all kids in Kansas because, you know, we have all of the kids are in the classroom together, special education and regular education. And when the state doesn't fund special education, that hurts everybody because school districts have to pull from their savings to make up for the lack of funding of special education from the state legislature.
Yeah, the way this works, and we've talked about this many times at the local level, but I want to try to try to make this a little bit clearer for folks, is right, that the there are basically three pots of money that schools can get money from. Capital outlay, and then they have their local operating budget, they have their operating budget, and then, forgive me, the third one is escaping me right at the moment. But the idea is the operating budget money, according to federal law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA is what special ed parents call it for short. I'm a special ed dad. They know this. So
right.
this is not new information to them. But because of that, part of IDEA is that you have to give kids a free and appropriate public education. That's the language in the law. And so no matter what it actually costs, that they have to pay the freight for that, otherwise they're violating federal statute, let alone what the state does.
That's exactly right, Nick. That's right. And so if those kids are legally and morally entitled to those special education services under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And in Kansas, several years ago, the state said, you know what, we will also provide some funding as well to help local districts pay for those mandated special education services. And unfortunately, the state hasn't met its obligation since 2011. And so this, just the past last school year, the statewide shortfall just from the state legislature is $423 million statewide. So that is funds that school districts like Hutchinson, or, you know, I live in Manhattan, so, you know, that those local school districts then have to pull out of their general fund to pay for those mandated special ed services. And so, you know, this is not, I want to be very clear, we're not pitting general education against special education. They're all kids in the same classroom. The problem is that if local districts are having to pull out of their savings to provide those, the funding for those special education mandated services, that takes money away from all of the kids. So, you know, that's money that could help all children in Kansas schools with new programs, with, you know, field trips, with internships, with increasing salaries to help hire more paraprofessionals for the classroom. So it's a the bill that is pending tomorrow does not do the job, and so we are urging members of the House to vote no.
Do you think that Governor Kelly will allow this to stand if it does make it through the legislative process? Because doesn't she have line item veto over the budget?
She does have line item veto over budgets, and so I cannot speak for the governor. We would urge the legislature to scrap House Sub-Percentage Bill 387 that's going to be debated tomorrow. Just vote no. Let's scrap it, and let's give the House a clean bill that just has K-12 general education funding and special education that is fully funded by the state.
Speaking generally, in past years, the budget stuff and policy stuff has all been kind of rolled together into one bill. Is that how things are working this time around as well?
It seems that way, Nick, at least on the House side. The Senate has separated out special education funding and some other items that they want to address in late April when the legislature comes back after its break. But the House has this bill that they're voting on tomorrow, Tuesday, which, as I mentioned, has the funding in it. It also has a provision that that would set up this tracking of at-risk kids, essentially without their parents' consent. It would track them and then essentially say at the end of 5 years, oh, well, schools, if you didn't meet specific standards with these kids, we are going to cut or eliminate your at-risk funding. And unfortunately, this kind of tracking experiment that they've set up is really set up to give schools bad data and bad results, and it seems like that it's really kind of a setup, unfortunately, to cut funding for some of the most vulnerable kids in our state. So it's bundling policy and funding again in very bad ways, and so that's why KASB is urging a no vote tomorrow in the House.
Okay, let's talk about remind people how at-risk funding is calculated now, at least as best you can. Obviously, I know that's complex, but
it is a little bit complex. But essentially, at-risk funding is determined by the number of kids that you have in your school district who qualify for free or reduced lunch. That's seen as what's called kind of a proxy, that if kids are from families with a challenging financial situation, that obviously can lead to a lot of factors that make it harder for kids to do well in school. And so then districts receive some additional funding from the state to help make up for that, to provide for additional supports in the classroom, additional programs, and that kind of thing. And so what this bill would do is it will set up, again, this tracking where kids would be in a group for 5 years, and then if they don't make a certain level of achievement, then the state would cut the funding. And the thing that's tricky about this is that in a lot of cases, a child who's considered at risk may not be considered at risk for, say, the entirety of that 5 years that's envisioned under the bill. You know, they may have one at-risk factor that gets addressed, and then they are, you know, they're not at risk anymore. But this bill would continue to track them throughout this 5-year period in the bill, And what happens is, I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but if people who know about surveys and research data know that if you get to a point where you have too small of a group of kids who are still in that cohort, it would be called, then that doesn't give you good data. And then if you don't have good data, the state looks at it and says, oh, sorry, you don't have good data, so you don't get at-risk funding anymore. Your entire district doesn't get at-risk funding. And so it's a very puzzling experiment that seems to be envisioned that would really hurt at-risk kids.
Okay, can I be blunt, Leah? My family would have fallen under the at-risk criteria during COVID when my wife was staying home with the kids and I was working here in Hutchinson, but I've gotten a raise since then, and so now they wouldn't. So does that make sense?
That is a perfect example. Or, you might have a child who is at risk because for a short amount of time because, maybe their parents have split, have said, hey, kids, we're splitting up. And, of course, that's very traumatic for a family. But, maybe after a few months, the child has gotten some help either at school or, through counseling, and they're not considered at risk anymore, right? So there are just a lot of different factors that determine whether a child is at risk, not just the financial factors. And as you mentioned, Nick, it's temporary. And so, your kids could have been in an at-risk category last year, but they're not this year. But they would be tracked throughout this. They would be in a group that is being tracked throughout the 5 years.